This is Icon Art Radio. I'm Bill Teeple. I'm here with Alan Cobb, my co-host. And our special guest today is Greg Thatcher, whose work is on view at Icon Gallery. Now, we have often mentioned that if this show is being repeated 3 years from now, it may not be on view at Icon Gallery, but in December of 2010, we're having our Icon Invitational, and which will be up through into through January 22nd. And as you enter the gallery, just to your right, you'll see two magnificent drawings. And they're both of yew trees. Now, tell us a little bit about how you got started drawing yew trees and the whole story of it.
Okay. Actually, before I started doing any serious drawing, I studied drawing, painting, and printmaking in college. And I studied in the States and I studied in Canada, and I have a master's degree from the University of Saskatchewan in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. Don't try to say it too fast. So I came here and I was on faculty and I was doing a series of handmade paper. I was taught how to do handmade paper and made all the machinery and everything with Madeleine Desjoli.
Right.
So I did a whole series on snorkeling and water and fish and reefs and all this stuff. And then it just got to be boring. You know, I just kind of felt like I didn't want to do it anymore. Mm-hmm. So when that happens and you're an artist, you start kind of feeling a little bit uncomfortable. You know, where am I going to go? What am I going to do? So my wife said, we should go to England. I thought, oh, great. Okay, how are we going to do this? You know, being on faculty and not having huge, you know, revenue resources and all that. So then I thought about it and I came up with a plan. The plan was is that what I would do would be to write a grant from the Iowa Arts Council and work in Skelmersdale, England, because they had a marshy school there. And a very, very dear friend of mine, Stephen Whittle, who was a printmaker, had a printmaking studio there. So I rang him up, said, hey, Stephen, could I come and work with you? Would you sign off on the grant and all that? So he said, fine. So I got the grant, which sounds great, but it was only $500. But it legitimized the whole thing. So then I could go to people based on the exhibits I had, and I could say, will you put in X amount of dollars? If you put in X amount of dollars, then I will give you an original artwork. If you put under $100 in, then I will give you a print. I had no idea what I was going to do. Never been to England before. Had been to Europe many times. Never been to England. So I was going over. This was kind of a scary situation.
Because why did Jan get the?
Because all of her, in her youth, she had spent a huge amount of time in England, in Ireland. So there's this strong draw there. Plus, I have family ties there. She has family ties there. So there was a strong draw. So we went. We went to Skelmersdale. And we're trying to find all kinds of information and different things to do. So Stephen had a whole backlog of catalogs and things from different parts of the country, and we would go out and tour on the weekends because he had two children the same age as my two boys at that point. And at the end of the trip, we went through where his dad was staying, and we stayed with his father, and we were driving through this one place in the Gloucestershire area, and I saw Painswick. And Painswick was one of these pamphlets that I had gone through, and they had these beautiful avenues of yew trees, and I've always loved trees, but to see them all kind of lined up together with the paths, I thought, I gotta go there. So we went there the next day and we had lunch, and then I took a bunch of pictures, and then I came back and I kind of never really thought about it that much. And then my grandfather passed away. He was 98 and he passed away, and I thought, all right, well, I'm going to be in the plane. What am I going to do sitting around in airports? You know, it's really boring. This is pre-computer and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So I thought, well, I'll just take one of these drawings and I'll draw. So I took one. I brought my whole portfolio because I would see all my cousins and my family and all that. So I took all this and I started working on this little, tiny little drawing. It was just about 4 inches by 5 inches or 6 inches in pencil. Took it there, showed, you know, one of my cousins is an art dealer and takes people to Europe and all this stuff. And I went through all the prints I had done, all the mixed media things I had done. And then I showed him this one thing, and he says, don't waste your time on any of this stuff. He says, just do that. And I thought, oh, it was like being hit in the stomach. You know? I just spent the whole summer working on this, and now you say it's not, you know. And then I thought, no, maybe he's on to something. So I finished the drawing on the way home, and I took it in, and I showed it to Jan, and she started crying. I said, okay, I got it. This is what I'm going to start doing. So that started this whole kind of situation with the yew trees. And it's called St. Mary's Churchyard, and there's 100 yew trees there. And the yew trees were planted in the Middle Ages, so they're, you know, 200, 250 years old. And they're these great trees that there's dirt pathways and then the trees, and they're quite large. I mean, they grow up, they've been toparied, which means they've been cut.
How old are they?
250 wow. years old. And which for yew tree is actually very young, but nonetheless. So there's these pathways, and when you walk through, the trees are the main feature. Mm-hmm. It's not made for humans to walk through, in the sense it is, because they're cut out in the middle so you can walk through. But they've allowed the trees to grow, so you have to bend down and you have to walk to this side. And I just love that, because it's like the trees are dictating where I go. I'm not dictating. So that kind of started the whole relationship with these trees. And in the beginning, I began drawing just the facade, the outside part of the tree. And, you know, when you see a yew tree, it may be 25 feet high and, you know, quite large if you were to go around the circumference, you know, maybe 50 feet around or something like that. Not the trunk, but the whole tree, the greenery. Mm-hmm. And 1/4 inch of that is greenery. The rest is all the boughs and the branches and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's this huge network of information in there. So in the beginning, I started drawing just the outside, did a whole series on that. And then I got another grant to go over, and so I went over again, and I continued doing this thing of pre-selling artwork and doing that. And I'd take the whole family, and we would go, and luckily I had friends that lived, you know, close by there, so we didn't have to pay for housing or very little. And we just, you know, I would go and work. I would go and draw for 6 or 8, 10 hours a day, and that's what I did for, you know, 2 or 3 months. And then one summer, we came back, and they had a snowstorm. Now, I know it sounds a little odd to think that they had a snowstorm in England, but it actually does happen. This is inland. So the snow, because, you know, in England it's very wet, so the snow is very, very heavy. So it broke off part of the tree. So this beautiful, shaped, gorgeous tree, they had this wonderful kind of anthropomorphic qualities to it. Could be, you know, ice cream, or it could be a, you know, a wild animal or a beast or a god, or there's all these different kind of wonderful qualities that they have. Part of it had broken off, and I thought, you know, that's kind of interesting. And I looked at the tree and I thought, well, maybe I should do something for the tree. So I started doing drawings about the inside of the trees, showing that part. Also got in a little bit of trouble because I made a bit of a stink with the paper in town, because they had hired a quote unquote forestry expert to come in and fix the trees after they had been damaged during that storm. And I thought, why would they have a forest expert to come in and fix the trees when these are actually topiary trees? He doesn't know what he's doing.
Yeah.
And he came in, I came in, and there's these gorgeous trees that I was absolutely, completely in love with. And they'd been cut down to look like broccoli. And I was just shattered on the inside. So I made a big stink about it, huge big stink in the paper, and, you know, said, you know, what are they doing? And, oh, you know, all this kind of stuff. And then I went home. So I came back the next year, and I'm sitting there drawing, and the church warden came up to me and goes, now, are you the man that made the big problem with the trees? And she was a little bit kind of ticked off at me because I had done it, but she understood, because the trees, I did it because they meant something to me. So over the years, it ended up that she's actually purchased some of my work, has it in her collection. We've become very good friends. So it's kind of cute in that way. So I started doing a series based on the inside of the tree. And mind you, I had learned how to draw in college, but I didn't really know how to draw. Mm-hmm. So I had to teach myself how to draw. How could I get what I wanted to get out of a, you know, six or eight different kinds of pencils? So I would use the H pencils, and they start off at 9, which is very hard, and they go down to 2, and then they go into the, you know, HB, and then the B range and that. Mm-hmm. And I found that the paper has a what's called a tooth. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want them to be too textural, the drawings. So to get it to be smooth and to try to get it to be in the gray range of the pencil, I needed to use very hard pencils.
Right.
Which then meant that physically, if I wanted to get it dark and I wanted the image to hang together, which means that the light and the dark would be on equal footing and not separate, then the only way I could do that was through pressure. So when you look at some of these drawings, not the one that's in the gallery, but some of the ones, they'll be like wavy.
Right.
Because I've had to physically manipulate the paper mm-hmm. to get it to go dark. Mm-hmm. And then it stays within the gray range. So it stays kind of in that range. Mm-hmm. So continuing to keep working on that series, that started in 1991 was the beginning date. So since that time, I've done... There's 108, interestingly, 108 pictures in that series, but actually there's many more as well. But that's the kind of one where I'm at now. And some of the ones, they were getting to the point where sometimes I could work on the drawings from a photograph. And then it got to the point when I was working underneath the tree that there's, you know what happens when you're under and you have something that's very, very spatial, and you take a photograph of it, the depth of field just all goes, and you can't see any difference in space. It all flattens mm-hmm. out. So I thought, well, I'll be smart. You know, I'll work up this drawing, I'll get it all set up, and then I'll take it home and work on it and finish it up. Well, I tried that one time, and it didn't work. I had everything that I had worked on at home in my studio had to erase and start over again. So I just thought, okay, I'm just going to work from life, so they'll be plein air drawings. They have to be to scale, and they have to be exactly what I see. Because if I didn't, there's so much information that's going on in there, and someone would come up and say, well, how are you doing today, Greg? And then I'd start talking to them, and I'd have nowhere where I was. I couldn't find my way back to where I was in the drawing. So that was the way I had to start doing it to scale, and I had to start doing exactly what I saw, because otherwise I couldn't trace myself back.
Yeah.
Because you're working opposite anyway, because the boughs are actually brown, mm-hmm. and in the drawing I'm making them white. So you're working opposites anyway, and then mm-hmm. to put that, and then with all this information, so I just found it was easier just to do it that way. So mm-hmm. they started taking longer and longer and longer to do. And I had done one really very, very lovely drawing. I think you've seen it. It's a nice big one about that size. Yeah. And it took about 350 hours of drawing time. And most of that's, you know, sitting right underneath the tree. And this last one, the one that's in the show at the Icon Gallery, it ended up taking over 600 hours in 3 trips to England to work on.
I saw that written on the back. You had the hours written on the
back.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I keep track of it, you know, because it's like, all right, well, how much did I charge for this thing? You know, how much did I get paid? You know?
Can I get $2 an hour?
$2 an hour, or 50 cents or a dime or something. I figure if you're going to put that much time into it, just, you know, you just, I kind of sort of keep an eye on it. So,
They need to have a museum in that village for the yew tree drawings, I think.
Yeah, that's a whole different story, my relationship with the church. You know, we can get into that if we wanted to.
Well, we have some time.
Yeah.
But let me point out to the listeners that we're interviewing Greg Thatcher, who's the... how many years have you taught in the upper school, the art? He's the main art teacher at MSA.
Since about 78. Right. So it's about 22 years.
And he's quite an accomplished artist, but he has, since 1991, been focusing on the drawing of the yew trees from the, which is the, what's the name of the churchyard?
St. Mary's Churchyard in Painswick, England.
All right, well, go on. Tell more stories. This is a great, I love this whole story.
Okay, so they, remember I was telling you the story about the church warden. Yeah. Okay, so I got it patched up with her. She was okay. But there was always this kind of, the vicar, which is basically the main priest at the church. He was always a little bit, you know, but he never knew who I was. But he was always kind of negative because he knew there was this guy that had caused this big problem for the church because it questioned their authority about what they should do as far as what these trees are concerned. And he, you know, he didn't like that. So I'm in there one time and I'm with my family. We're eating lunch. It's a lovely sunny day. And there's a wedding just about ready to take place in the church, which is a kind of a side benefit of being there. They play the church bells all the time. And it's sweet, you know, you're sitting there drawing and they're you know, it's has one of the top I don't know what they
Carillon,
yeah, mm-hmm. The bell ringers for this for all over England is there. Mm-hmm. It's gorgeous. Really, really wonderful. So they're ringing the bells and everybody's in their big, you know, foo-foo dresses and everybody's all spiffed up and everything. And then he comes over to me. He's all in his habit, you know, all in his black. He's all ready to go in to do the wedding. And he goes, "Are you the guy that, you know, this artist that, you know, had this?" And I, he was just, his hands, he was shaking.
Just suffused with Christianity.
Yes, yes. Yeah, that it was just, it was bubbling. So he proceeded in front of my family, you know, I'm not sure if he used any swear words or not, but he just tore into me, you know, right before he went in and gave this, you know, married these people. And it was this terrible thing, you know, it was just, you know, you don't know what you're talking about, and da-da-da-da-da, and he was terrible, and what you've done to the church, and, you know, just all this kind of stuff. And then he just kind of goes off, you know. Well, it wasn't too much longer after that that they sort of put him out to pasture. So they, you know, put him way up in the another section.
Promoted him to another position.
Yeah. So since that time that there's a new vicar, mm-hmm. They, especially this last time that I went, we wanted to do a film. So I've got a camera from the art department, and we took over this little camera and we did all this stuff, and we're trying to, you know, the pathways are bumpy. So I don't know if you've ever tried to make a film, but if you ever tried to make a film, and, you know, I'm a big guy and I've got a big, you know, a big step and everything, and you're taking the, going down these avenues and the, you know, they're going up and down and up and down. And I thought, nah, this isn't going to work. How are we going to do this? So we talked to the people at the church and they said, well, you know, maybe you could borrow one of these carts that the, you know, there's this older woman who's, you know, she goes for tea every day over at the inn, and maybe you could borrow her cart. So we borrowed her cart, and my son and my wife, you know, put some clothing in the front and a little basket of this little, you know, electric cart. And then they drove very slowly down the pathways. And we ended up getting some quite nice footage. And they also took us up and let us go all the way up to the top of the church, up to where the spire is. And then we could take aerial, almost like aerial footage and footage inside. And it was really, really nice. So we ended up having like an hour and 20 minutes worth of footage, and it ends up that it's 3 minutes and 50 seconds, you know, of film. But yeah, that's okay. It's okay. But it kind of gives an idea of, you know, what I was trying to do. Mm-hmm. And what inspired me, I think, when I first saw these was trying to create, how can you visually create a situation where the viewer can transcend? How can you, what kind of system can you use to do that? And one system that a lot of people use is, you know, a spatial system, because we're so spatially oriented that if you can have something that, you know, if you look in space and things that are closer to you are bigger and things that are smaller are further away. So if you could use something like that, then it moves somebody's awareness from where they are back in, which then they can get deeper into their own awareness. So these trees, they're set up where there's two trees and then 20 feet away, another two trees, and then 20 feet away, another two trees, and 20 feet away, another two trees. So as you look down the pathway, then you're kind of going through these stages. And it was a really an interesting kind of revelation in a sense. Oh, here's a system that I could use that would allow the viewer to be able to, I could take them deeper. You know, I could take them back into something. So, spatially. So that was the first kind of clue that I started using. And then, but that's a quite an obvious one in a sense. I mean, it's, you know, it's quite apparent. You can see it. And then the later drawings, they're more, it's a similar system, but it's much different because there's so much more information. And that you'll, again, you see foreground, middle ground, background, you see all of those orientations. Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, it's a different kind of all over space that you're immersed in rather than just going back deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what the idea is. So at this point, I'm a good boy with the church. They like me. I even went to church a couple of times.
Oh, wow. They just like that.
Yeah, they like that. But I've always, all along, I've always been donating. Every time I donate, when I go,
they like that more.
And I offered to do them. I'm kind of the yew tree artist in the town.
I bet.
In the village. So they all know me. And I offered to do them a postcard and, you know, try to help them out, which they rejected at that one point. But there's a man there that I know really well. And then, you know, we'll see if they want to.
Yeah.
And they have a little gallery there, but, you know, it's, and I had actually had my work shown there many times. There was a gallery right across the street. Lovely lady who's a really good friend of mine. It's called the Fiery Beacon Gallery. And so, you know, I've had work on there. So, yeah.
How many people in the village?
Probably 500 or something like
and
that.
And it's a rural area?
Yeah. 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 It's close to a city. I mean, it's close to Stroud. It's probably, you know, 10 minutes from Stroud and 10 minutes from Cheltenham. And then Gloucestershire, the actual town of Gloucestershire where the big church is, it's probably a half an hour away. Mm-hmm. From Oxford, it's about an hour, a little bit more than an hour, depending on how you go. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's a beautiful, you know, that area in the middle part of the England is absolutely the most beautiful. It's absolutely mm-hmm. gorgeous there. Mm-hmm. And the cottages, and I've done a whole series also on right. thatched cottages because, yep. you know, that's my name is Thatcher. And so,
yeah.
you know, there's this deep kind of resonance with that. So we went out and we did all kinds of research and I loved doing that. And I actually went and collected some thatch and brought it illegally into the country. And I've done drawings of that and used it in drawings and used it in different kinds of mixed media work and stuff like that. So, yeah.
Interesting. Mm. Isn't the yew tree that uniquely English tree from which the longbow was made?
That's the lore, but actually most of those came from France. But there are more interesting stories than that. Mm-hmm. And the more interesting stories of that is that if you go way back and you research what the yew tree is, mm-hmm. you have to realize that the tree itself, mm-hmm. the greenery, will stop rain, okay? Mm-hmm. So you probably, you know, everybody's heard of the, you know, Runnymede and the signing of the, whatever it is.
Magna Carta
and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So I got in touch with this one man who was kind of a yew tree specialist, sweet guy. And he took me to where the United States had built this little kind of like a museum. And he took me and we had tea and all that. And he said, now this is where the Americans think that the Magna Carta was signed. He says, now I'm going to take you to where it was actually signed. So we went across, went over a bridge, went over to this other place. And he'd done all this research and he took me to a tree. Mm-hmm. Well, that is interesting. He took me to this tree. So we sat under this tree, which is this, you know, it was probably about 30 feet, 35 feet around. Huge, big tree. Mm-hmm. It split, and you could kind of crawl down inside it and all this, still alive. And sat there for probably 2 hours talking to this guy about yew trees, and he wanted to know about meditation and consciousness and mm-hmm. all this kind of stuff. So we talked all about this, and in the end he goes, you know, the tree really liked this conversation. It was kind of cute. So anyway, it was signed there because it was raised, a little bit raised. Mm-hmm. It was open so that they could see, so that they wouldn't be attacked. And also because they wouldn't get rained on. Mm-hmm. So it was protected. So take that and then go back to the Druid time. And then you see the yew tree is actually what they call the tree of life.
Yeah.
It's like the first, kind of like the first Christmas tree or something mm-hmm. like that. Mm-hmm. So things come from that. Things spring yeah. from that.
Archetypal
tree. So if you look at, in England, all the major churches are on ley lines.
Right.
Okay? So right. they're on ley lines. And you'll also find that there's usually at least one or more yew trees in every churchyard, which is mm-hmm. because most of the trees were there, you know, 1,000 or more years before the churches were actually established, because mm-hmm. that's where people would come and that's where they would worship.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So as they moved forward, mm-hmm. as they moved forward, then they built the churches there. And then the purpose of the tree is really interesting, because the purpose of the trees is to ward off evil
mm-hmm.
and also to help people with suffering. So we went to the pits where the Black Death was,
mm-hmm.
okay? They're lined with yew trees all the way around. So one little interesting last little story. My mother passed away. And when she passed away, I felt like I had to go and draw. So we went to England and I was drawing. And I was sitting there and I was doing this drawing, and I felt the trees coming to me, and they wanted to help me to deal with the suffering. I just started crying, you know, because mm-hmm. it was not made up. It was something that was absolutely real, and it was something that was this incredible experience that yeah. I had. And being underneath a tree, one feels like you're in the self, you know, yeah. like you're protected, like you're safe.
Yeah.
That it's a really a wonderful place to be. So that's yeah. kind of what draws me back, is to have that kind of quality.
Well, that's great.
Yeah, because it's just, you know, it's they're so special, they're so simple, that I just like kind of hanging out there with them and being there.
Yeah.
And, you know, being the one, for who knows why, that I'm kind of their spokesperson.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
spreading them out. Why am I from Iowa doing a series of drawings about England?
Right.
I don't know. Doesn't matter.
But they're completely beautiful drawings. They're absolutely wonderful. They've been stunning to me for years, and I'm so glad we have them an icon right now.
You've been listening to Icon Art Radio, a production of Iowa Contemporary Art, Fairfield.